All right, welcome back to it here on a Thursday. It feels like I was just on vacation, and yet here I am, almost through the first week back. But don't tempt me. I'll run again. Let's see. My next guest, Dan Mitchell, co-founder of the Center for Freedom and Prosperity and the Center for Freedom and Prosperity Foundation, here to talk about the wealth tax, which is basically a tax, an attack on anybody who's earned something and saves something. If you save a lot, and you build wealth because you come up with a great new invention or idea, or you build a company that's successful. You know, if you're Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates and you build something big and powerful, you should be penalized for that, thinks Elizabeth Warren. They want to penalize success in America. I've never understood this idea. Dan Mitchell here with us. Dan, how are you? Good to have you.
I'm glad to be on the program.
So the wealth tax is, it's only a couple of pennies on this and a couple more pennies on that. Fact of the matter is, if they start with a wealth tax at $50 million, it's on every piece of real property, a house, a car, a stamp collection, I don't know, whatever you might have, right? It's a tax on real property. Of course, there'll be arguments. What's the house really worth? Is the house worth $1 million? Is it worth $500,000? And the chaos ensues. Where am I going wrong?
You're definitely not going wrong in that it will be a massive intrusion into the private affairs of people, where the government, the IRS, in effect, will have the right to come into your house and look at, your great aunt Mildred's painting on the wall. We think that's worth this much. You think it's worth that much. But as an economist, what really bothers me about this proposal is that it's a tax on a tax on a tax on a tax. You earn money, you pay tax on it. You save and invest it. You start paying double taxes on dividends and capital gains. Of course, when you die, there's a potential death tax. But now, every single year, even if your assets have fallen in value, according to Elizabeth Warren, and it's not just her, it's Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and others, they want to come in and have the government say, well, we think you're worth this amount of money. We're going to take anywhere between 2% of it and 6% of it. So it's a massive penalty on saving and investing. And frankly, it's just un-American in the sense of punishing the American dream.
You know, let's run through a real-world scenario, shall we? Let's talk about Elon Musk. We'll use him as an example. Elon Musk, you know, became more and more successful at 25 years of age, at 30, at 35. He's built very successful companies. If the government was taking a 6% chunk out of his real value along the way, it would have blunted his ability to create SpaceX or Tesla or do a variety of things. You see, when you have success, you have more resources to try bigger and bigger ideas. And people don't understand this. Well, look at this great bridge the government built. Well, that's true, but if that had remained in private hands, if those resources had remained in private hands, great things could have been done and would have been done there too, because government is exceptionally inefficient at spending money. Correct?
That is so true. When I think of Joe Biden's $2 trillion boondoggle, supposedly for infrastructure, but something like only 6% of the money is for roads and bridges,
right?
That would be the most effective and efficient money. And even that, of course, usually doesn't pass a cost-benefit test. The rest of it's just to expand the social welfare state. And then you add on top, you have the inefficiency in the way government spends money. And then you have this new way of collecting money that would be very harsh in terms of its treatment of private saving and investing. And what really upsets me about this, frankly, I don't lose a lot of sleep at night thinking, Elon Musk is going to suffer. What worries me is that because this will reduce the capital stock of the country, as economists say,
Correct. Simply
the amount of saving and investing, that's going to reduce productivity in our economy. And one thing that very clearly tracks with productivity over time is wages for American workers. So this is going to hurt American workers. It's going to reduce American competitiveness, and it's going to fund a more wasteful and bloated federal government.
One of the other things put forth is the idea of taxing unrealized capital gains. I can't even make this up. They want to tax people on money they never received. And if we go back to the wealth tax, for example, let's say you have real estate, a lot of it. Let's say you're Bo Turner, Ted Turner's son, who has a tremendous amount of land in Arizona, New Mexico, and so forth. And your land has appreciated over the course of a year or 10 or 20. They come in and they say, we want you to pay this huge bill because you have a wealth tax, you know, or we want you to pay taxes on unrealized capital gains, money you've never even received, you need to pay taxes on. This is the foolishness of it. And here's the problem. When you look at what's happening in the pandemic, if you can't pay your taxes because the government shut you down, or the government says your property's worth twice as much as you think it's worth, then they start taxing you. And if you don't pay your tax bill, guess what? The government comes and takes your property, and sooner or later, the government has all the property. We call that communism from where I came from.
It's definitely gets an F minus grade in economics, because you're right. When you start not only taxing wealth, but then you start taxing phantom capital gains, as you say, money that simply doesn't exist. The government saying, oh, well, we think your stock portfolio is now worth 10% more. You say, but I haven't sold it. I don't have 10% more. Doesn't matter. We want to tax that. Now, at least you can calculate the value of a stock from year to year. What about the long-lived assets that don't have any easily, like a privately held company? What is that worth? So the notion that you're going to have the IRS fighting with entrepreneurs every year about the value of assets, not only for the wealth tax, but also for this incredibly silly tax on unrealized capital gains. I mean, they're going to be proposing to double and triple the size of the IRS, when in reality, we should just be ripping up the entire tax code so we can turn the IRS into a harmless oversight agency.
Yeah, it's the attacks on successful people in America. Never thought I'd see it. And I've discussed this on the program before, but I never looked at anybody that had done well, that had a big house, that drove by my house in a nice car and thought, man, they should be taxed more. I tried to figure out, what did they do? How hard did they work? What do I have to do to achieve what they've achieved? How do I buy a house like that? How do I get a car like that? How do I, whatever the case may be? Or if I want to save all the money and put it into an account, how do I do that? That's not the mindset from these fools. The mindset is, oh my God, they've done too well, and the guy over here doesn't have anything. So their idea is, if a guy goes to work every day from the time he's 18 years old to the time he's 65 and retires and has built himself a nest egg, that they're entitled to that because the guy that sat on a bar stool for those same years and accumulated nothing but debt and heart disease deserves to be protected and bailed out by the guy that did not because of personal choices. That's what irritates me most. I'll give you the last word.
Class warfare is an ideology of hate and envy. But let's conclude by looking at some economic reality. Professor Nordhaus of Yale University, Nobel Prize winner. He's not a right winger, not a libertarian. He got his Nobel Prize for his work on climate science and things like that. He estimated that when wealthy innovators and entrepreneurs get rich, they only capture 2.2% of that additional wealth. In other words, 97.8% of the additional wealth goes to you and me and everyone else in the country in the form of higher wages, lower prices, new products, new goods and services. The idea that we're going to punish that, that we're going to attack the free market system with punitive class warfare, it's disgusting.
Yeah. Dan Mitchell, always appreciate you being here, co-founder of the Center for Freedom and Prosperity. We will defend it till the last day, Dan. Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Quick break. It's the Steve Gruber Show.
Pure Michigan water has never been more important than it is today. You can find your Pure Michigan water experts at Wolverine Water. Wolverine Water has been installing Michigan-made products for almost 75 years now. Hometown products and hometown service, provided by your friends and neighbors at Wolverine Water since 1947. How about that for a cool drink of water? Wolverine Water. I've been a customer for over 20 years, too. If you're ready for the very best, you're ready for Wolverine Water. WolverineWaterSystems.com.
Hello, car of teenagers. If you don't mind, I'm only going to broadcast this out of the speaker on the passenger side so we can talk without the driver listening in. Okay, now that we're alone, we can talk about your friend's driving. It's okay, he can't hear us. Now, I'd never say this to his face, but he might be the worst driver in the history of the world. You should say something witty. Make a joke about the airbag or something. Hearses are funny, too. You could make a joke about hearses. I better say something to the driver real quick so he doesn't get suspicious that we're talking about him. Still talking to the passenger. Not about you at all. Just going to be one more minute. he is totally going to get you killed.
Find other interesting ways to speak up against reckless driving by visiting our website at speakuporelse.com. Because it doesn't matter what you say, just say something. Brought to you by the Ad Council and speakuporelse.com.
Scleroderma makes life hard. If you suffer from the disease or know someone who does, every day can be a challenge. But the Scleroderma Foundation Michigan chapter is working to make life easier for patients by providing support throughout the state. Each month, we host support groups in a variety of locations around Michigan that give patients the opportunity to share their feelings, express their concerns, and receive encouragement from community members. We also host virtual support groups for patients. Hand in hand, we can handle scleroderma. Learn more at scleroderma.org/Michigan.